Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to call the meeting of the House Transportation Finance Committee to order for Thursday, March 15th, 2018. We do have minutes before us. Representative Johnson, would you care to move approval of the minutes?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the minutes for Tuesday, March 13th.
Thank you. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Thank you. The minutes are approved. First up on the agenda today, House File 2739. Representative Hertaus, to your bill. Oh, we need a motion.
That would be good.
I would move your bill to Ways and Means.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 2739 is a bill that honors Officer Matthews by naming a section of U.S. Highway 12 in his memory. Members, I've been before you before on the Highway 12 issue, and we have this corridor that is the last rural section of Highway 12 that exists in the metro area. And unfortunately, I'm back here again. And last September 8th in 2017 at approximately 12:30 p.m., there was a report of debris on U.S. 12, which was received by the Wayzata Police Department. Shortly thereafter, Officer Bill Matthews arrived at the scene and was attempting to ensure the safety of the general public by removing that debris from the highway. Unfortunately, a short time while being involved in this task, Officer Matthews, while performing a rather mundane task that it was struck by a 54-year-old impaired motorist. And shortly thereafter, he died of his injuries as a result of the collision. So it just is troubling that we've had more than 25 deaths on this section of highway, and particularly that a member of our public safety division happened to be the most recent casualty on the roadway. Essentially, the city of Wayzata would like to honor Officer Matthews. When we had a hearing last week in transportation policy, Mayor Wilcox from Wayzata was here, as well as Chief Riswald. And so, members, that's pretty much the bill. It would rename a section of about 1 mile of U.S. 12 as Officer Matthews' section of highway, and we just want to remember badge number 7221 for his service to the community. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hertaus. Representative Houseman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The language in the fiscal note is slightly different than usual. Usually it's very clear, the sign costs paid by interested groups. But under expenditures, there it says these costs would be expenditures from the revolving sign account in the Trunk Highway Fund. And I thought I hadn't seen that on a fiscal note before, and they somehow seem in conflict with one another. Do you know what the issue is?
Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Houseman. No, I don't, and I didn't notice that. I didn't get a copy of that fiscal note, so I can't respond to that question.
I'm looking to my left to see if there's an answer. Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Houseman, if you look on the second page of the fiscal note, the lower half has the expenditure, and then below that is the revenue that notes that there's no net impact to MnDOT, so that the interest groups are paying for the fabrication costs of the signage.
So, Mr. Chair, it's just a bookkeeping thing. In other words, that what's being paid would be received in that revolving loan.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Lee.
And Representative Houseman, that's correct.
Any other questions today for Representative Hertaus? Representative Hertaus, I in no way want to diminish the importance of this bill, because it is an important bill, and I want to honor the memory of this fine officer, but when you made your opening remarks, you said this was the last section of Highway 12 that was rural. Did I hear you correctly?
U.S. 12 as a rural section of highway, the last section that exists in the metro area starts right at Wayzata and goes all the way out to the Wright County line.
So what does that mean, Representative Hertaus?
It means I'll be coming back here asking for more money in the future.
But Representative Hertaus, we get money for railroads too, not just for metro roads.
Yeah. No, I think the point I was trying to make is that this is a rural section of road that gets extraordinarily high metro volumes of traffic, and that was one of the reasons that we've had such a high crash rate of recent. And we had this safety audit study that was done on that section of road and identified many of the problem areas along Highway 12, and thank you for your support last year for addressing some of those needs.
Thank you, Representative Hertaus. I believe Representative Hornstein
has a reminder, Mr. Chair, to yes. Representative Hertaus. It's not practice here to be funnier than the chair.
Thank you. Everyone should know that. With that, I renew my motion that House File 2739 be moved out of the Ways and Means. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? You're on your way, Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Next up, we have House File 2908, Representative Wills. Welcome to Transportation Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I would like to move House File 2908 moved on to Ways and Means. Representative Wills, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. House File 2908 is a bill to rename a bridge in my district in honor of Dennis A. Groff. And I just wanted to share a brief story about Dennis. So Dennis A. Groff was born on January 21st in 1947 to Henry and Alice Groff on the family farm in rural Rosemount, which is in my district, located on Blaine Avenue, about a half mile north of County Road 42. Dennis was baptized and confirmed at St. John Evangelical Lutheran Church, which is located at the corner of Blaine Avenue and County Road 42. He graduated from Rosemount High School in 1965 and then joined the Army in 1967 and became a dust-off pilot. So as a dust-off pilot, he would pick up wounded soldiers and fly them to the nearest medical facility. A dust-off crew consisted of four people, two pilots, a medic, and a crew chief. Usually one pilot would fly the helicopter, while the other acted as the aircraft commander. Dennis and his crew died shortly after dropping off a wounded soldier in the early morning hours of October 19, 1968, when his helicopter went down in unknown circumstances near Sop Trang, Vietnam. He was only 21 years old. Dennis's brother, Jerry, contacted my office recently to request dedicating the bridge on Highway 52 at County Road 42 in Rosemount to his memory. Dennis is buried at St. John Evangelical Lutheran Church at Cemetery, which is about 1 mile west of the bridge that we're hoping to have dedicated. Dennis and Jerry grew up with their family in rural Rosemount. Their nephew still lives in Rosemount and works on the family farm, and their mother is still alive and living in Cannon Falls. She's 92 years old. I asked to see if she would be able to come and testify, but unfortunately, she doesn't travel too far from home. but I know she would have been here if she could. October 19th, 2018, will be the 50th anniversary of Dennis's death. And I'm asking for your support today to rename the bridge at Highway 52 and County Road 42 in his memory. Oh, I apologize, I have this picture as well. And then I just wanted to show you an aerial view of the bridge. This was my attempt to save paper.
That's okay. We need to grow more cheese.
There. Anyhow. It's a little blurry, but you can see the bridge goes over County Road 42. And you may recall I've requested funding in the past, bonding funding, for reconstructing that bridge, and we were unsuccessful in getting that funding, but we were able to pull together funding from various sources, federal level, a TED grant, and so on and so forth, to get that project completed along with Dakota County last summer. So the bridge has just recently been reconstructed. We added lanes underneath to improve sight lines and safety in that area. So you may be familiar with me bringing that issue before you. And now that the bridge is completed, it's also, I think, timely to give it a proper name in honor of Dennis A. Graff. So I ask for your support and happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Representative Wills. You might try moving that microphone out of the way. It's in line with your picture. That might be causing the lack of focus. No, I guess not. So,
good enough.
Any questions for Representative Wills?
I think you were right, Mr. Chair.
Don't hear that very often.
You said that. That
would you repeat that for the record, Representative Wills?
Baker, I would like to remind Representative Baker. Protocol.
Yeah, I should chastise him.
Oh, and Mr. Chair?
Representative Wills.
I also wanted to let you know that Dennis's brother Jerry is working with interested families and local groups such as the American Legion and our VFW in Rosemont to collect the funds necessary to pay for the signage, so it would not be a state expense.
Very good. I believe we're getting a fiscal note here shortly.
Yes,
so
I noticed that was lacking from your materials.
It's coming our way, I believe. Don't see any other questions for Representative Wills, but I'm going to wait for this fiscal note to come around so people can take a look at that in case they have a question about that. But thank you for bringing this forward. It's always good for us to remember those that have died in service of our country. Members, the fiscal note looks very similar to the last one, and I don't see any questions. So I believe, unless I see an objection, I believe we're ready to move forward with voting on the bill. I will renew my motion that House File 2908 be passed and moved on to Ways and Means. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed by the same sign. The bill is passed. You're on your way to Ways and Means. Representative Wills.
Thank you
for being with us. Thank you, members. Next up, we have House File 3593 from Representative Nash. Members, we will be laying this over. We do not have a fiscal note on this at this time, but we're happy to take testimony. Before you start in, Representative Nash, just remind those in the audience, I do not have a list of testifiers, but we'd be happy to take testimony from members of the audience if they so desire. If you want to get on the list, please contact the page. Otherwise, I'll ask for people to come forward after Representative Nash has presented his bill. To the bill, House File 3593, Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you want to deal with the amendment now or after I present it?
What is your preference, Representative?
It's a technical amendment that Mr. Burris can run through. It's simply changing the effective date from 2019 to 2018. So it's not really mind-boggling at all.
I'll move the A1 to get the bill in the shape the author would like. Mr. Burris, to the amendment.
Mr. Chair and members, the amendment moves, as was mentioned, the effective date on a number of provisions to be 2018 instead of 2019. So that would remove a delay in the aid reimbursement program, as well as delay in allocation of some of the funds that dollars that we'll probably be getting into in discussion of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Burris. I renew my motion for the A1. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The bill is amended. Representative Nash, go ahead with your
presentation. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Members, this is not a Minlar's bill, per se. It is a bill that is a result of business decisions that went in to the creation of Minlar's. And we've heard testimony over the summer and you in committee that DVS made a business decision to shift about 40% of the work that had been done after someone went to the deputy registrars and had previously been done at DVS. They made a business decision to shift that to deputy registrars to conduct at the window. So this is not a bill to burn witches at the stake, as some have said. It's got nothing to do with that. It's changing the way deputy registrars are reimbursed for work that they have done as a result of a change in business process at DVS. So I want to make sure that we take care of the deputy registrars, and I believe we all feel that same way. We have a whole room full of deputy registrars that service your constituents and mine. They're losing money on every transaction, and proverbially you can't make that up on volume. So what we need to do as a legislative body is make some corrections and help them become whole on the transactions that they're doing. And that's what this bill attempts to do. I was made a stop the other night in policy, and I know that many of you are very supportive of this concept and effort. And, Mr. Chair, I would open it up for testifiers because I know you've got a full agenda.
Well, you are the last bill
And I can go on endlessly if you like, but, you know, so members, this is...
If it's full, it's only because you're going to go on.
Well, I have been accused of being full of something in the past, so...
Careful now.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
We all like brevity, and sometimes when members speak too long on their bills, it makes people not want to vote for their bills.
Right.
Well said.
And, Mr. Chair, I know that I do have several testifiers that have come down here today, so if we could have them queue up.
Thank you, Representative Nash, but I would like you to go through at least through some of the details of the bill, especially the revenue source.
Sure, and I'm going to ask Mr. Burris to do that since he drafted this for me, and he can hit the highlights.
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, there are a couple of pieces to what's going on in the bill. The first is in Article 1, and it sets up an aid program for funding additional funds that would go to the deputy registrars as well as the driver's license agents. So the language in Section 1 lays out the allocation formula, so it's kind of a split essentially based on proportional allocation for funds going to both deputy registrars and driver's license agents. That article also contains the creation of an account that holds the aid dollars and explicit authority for the department to set up a reserve policy. The second piece of the bill, or kind of going along with that aid program, is the funding for the aid program. Essentially two funding streams. The first is found within the aid program language. This funding stream is from a portion of account balances in the driver and vehicle services operating accounts. So there's one for the motor vehicle side and the other operating account is for the driver's license side. A portion of the balance kind of sitting on the bottom line is transferred into the aid account and becomes part of the funding stream for the program. The second area of funding is through reallocation of some fee revenues that currently are deposited in the general fund. So there's a portion of a transaction filing fee that currently goes to the general fund, as well as a transfer fee and various fees associated with motor vehicle titling. all of those are reallocated to go into the new account that is then used for the aid program. The other piece that the bill contains is a change in the where a portion of license plate fees go. So this would be a $10 fee, generally $10 for special plates, $4.50 or $6 for regular plates, as well as various other fees in the fee schedule. Primarily, you'll see that on page 4. The change is, instead of those fees going into the vehicle services operating account, deputy registrars would retain 40% of the plate fee dollars. So that would be sort of similar to how the filing fee structure works when deputy registrars handle motor vehicle transactions. They retain the filing fee. This would be a kind of sort of a similar concept with respect to license plate related fees. And then the remainder would go into the vehicle services operating account. The final set of changes are in Article 3 of the bill and are largely conforming changes and technical cleanup and clarification. For the most part, that's to centralize the setting of fees into one table instead of having a fee set in a number of different provisions throughout the chapter.
I do not see any Representative House on a question.
First of all, I was trying to remember, so the other bill that we saw, that was a one-time only to reimburse for past losses, and this is looking forward. What I can't remember is where those funds were taken from and where these were taken from. Are they in conflict? Are they compatible, the other bill that we heard here?
I will look to Mr. Lee to answer your question.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, the bill that was in Transportation Finance on Tuesday spent $9 million out of the Driver Services Fund, so it's one of the two funds that's being addressed here. If that bill were to be enacted and this bill were to be enacted, essentially there would be less of a balance to pull from the driver services funds for reimbursement. There's sort of another component of this, which is going forward, the Department of Public Safety would determine what the reserve policy would be set at. And so it's whatever is in the reserve policy and whatever is left of the balance plus 15% would anything in excess of that would then be distributed through this program to the deputy registrars.
And then, Mr. Chair, I don't know if my other question also would be directed at Mr. Lee. So the cost of manufacturing the plates is more than we charge for the plates, and then so there's a fee. But after this, the department would have to absorb the additional cost for the plates, and maybe that's maybe why we need to still wait for a fiscal note to determine. Then they'll have to take it out of their budget, which would be, I suppose, general fund, right?
Mr. Lee. Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, that's correct. The fiscal note would be needed to know kind of the dollar amounts in terms of the redirecting of the 40% and the amount of balances that would be redirected going forward. The way the funds operate is that the fees collected from driver and vehicle transactions first go into the two special revenue accounts, the driver services and the vehicle services accounts, and then the legislature directly appropriates the amount to operate the agency. Also, part of the plate part of the license registration cost is covered by an appropriation from the Highway User Distribution Fund. So DVS has those three main sources, two sources, the special revenue funds collected from fees and then an appropriation from the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. So were this to be enacted going forward, there would be less balances in those funds. And historically, the amount that the legislature has appropriated to operate the Department of Driver and Vehicle Services has been less than what's the total amount in the balances. So those balances and part of those balances are accounted for in the reserve amount, which this legislation would sort of force the agency to formalize. And then in the past, when there have been extra programs added to what DVS does, additional appropriations have come from the Driver and Vehicle Services funds to pay for those to DVS. But in the past, some other things have been funded out of those special revenue funds. I think in 2013, there was an appropriation out of, I believe it was the Driver Services funds for BCA computer systems. In the 2015 session, there was an appropriation out of those funds for highway user tax distribution. And then in the 2017 session, there was an appropriation of those two funds for maintenance on MNLARS.
And so, Mr. Chair, if I could just one more question. So is the end result, so now we have a customer, now we've figured out a way the customer pays the full cost of the plates and the fee that covers it. But now the customer would be paying less than the cost of the plates, and we take the balance out of another account. But doesn't that sound as though we make everybody pay for the loss of the sale of that plate?
Mr. Lee. Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, there wouldn't be a general fund appropriation for this, so it wouldn't I guess the department would have to speak to what their operating level would be and what their appropriation needs would be. This bill wouldn't redirect general fund dollars to then cover the cost of PBS operating. Representative Nash.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hausman, really good question. I think some of the math that went into this also, if 40% of the work is being shifted to the deputy registrar, it sounds to me that the department is looking to maybe find ways to streamline their own employees because they're moving that work towards the registrars. So I think that there's an additional way that we can look at savings from the department as well to begin putting towards the shift in how we're paying the registrar. So, you know, again, there's a business decision made to move 40%, so I think that there's got to be something that's backing that up. So I think that, you know, we're going to be able to find ways, and I know that in speaking to the chair, waiting for the fiscal note is something that I think is smart. And I'm happy to wait on that. And, you know, we've known each other for a while. I'm not going to move forward on something that is going to cause a lot of damage. But, you know, this is a decision that was made, and we have to sort of be the referee and sort it out.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Nash, for the bill. And I think the concept is good. However, as I look at the bill, there's several places where amounts are in law going to the general fund, and we, instead of sending those to the general fund, send those to the deputy registrar account. I'm trying to find the place in the bill, Mr. Chair, but there's at least two of them. The question would be, shouldn't it come out of instead the money that's currently going to the driver vehicle services account? Because that's the dedicated account that goes then to fund the agency for their work, which is being diminished by 40%, rather than being a hit to the general fund. But I think maybe, Representative Nash, what you're talking about is you'd probably like to do that, but you want to see what the fiscal note looks like first. Is that right?
Representative Nash?
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, yes. And Mr. Burris, again, if you wouldn't mind addressing that since we talked about it as we were drafting this as the general approach that we took.
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, there are really kind of three different pieces to it. One is the account balances, and those would be swept into the new aid account. So anything sitting on the bottom line after you account for reserves under the department's reserve policy, as well as a percentage to build a little bit of cushion, whatever's remaining in both of the operating accounts would go towards aid. So that's the first source. The second would be the 40% collection of the plate fees, and then the third source would be the reallocation of the general fund dollars. So it's sort of a multi-tiered approach under the language. And those general fund dollar reallocations are found on page 8 if you're looking for the language.
So, Mr. Chair.
A follow-up, Representative Drazkowski.
maybe Mr. Burris can help me find, in, there was $3.50 going to, and I can't find it in the bill, and I don't have my cheaters with me. There was $3.50 going to the general fund. We struck that in the bill somewhere. And then there was $5. What page?
8.2.
Okay, 8.2. I can't even read the page number, Representative Daniels. Thank you. Thank you. So on 8.2, there's money going to the general fund. Instead, we send that to the special revenue fund, which is, if I understand it correctly, that's then from where the money, or some of that money then could be allocated to the deputy registrars. On 8.4, there's $5 going into the vehicle services operating account. It seems to me that would be a better place to get the money from rather than the money going to the general fund. If we can, if things can still float, and as a matter of fact, maybe it needs to come from there anyway so the department has some incentive to downsize their operations by 40%. To match the amount of less work that they're doing because the deputy registrars are doing the work.
Representative Nash.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, that sounds like a fine idea. I'm open to whatever, you know, we put the bill together and try to apply a 40% change to transactions, but, you know, this is going to be laid over. We're still waiting for the fiscal note. We're happy to still work on it. I know that in talking to the chair that this is all something we're going to try to mesh up and get done together.
I have visions of a flow chart floating in my head.
It's going to be a big one.
I'm looking forward to that discussion, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Drazkowski. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nash, there's a line that reads that the funds in the account cannot be used for administrative expenses, and I'm just curious, what are you meaning by that? Are there, what kind of expenses might there be that cannot be paid for?
Representative Nash.
I would again ask to phone a friend of Mr. Burris to define what it is that we put in there for administrative fees, what that entails and what it doesn't entail.
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck, I would anticipate that that language is being viewed by the department as that the aid dollars that are available would need to, in their entirety, go out to deputy registrars and driver's license agents, and any kind of administrative costs, like some portion of staff time to figure out the distribution, would come from their operating budget appropriations.
Okay, thank you. So, Mr. Chair, then it would be helpful to know perhaps a comment from the department about that. And I also, I mean, we have heard the figure 40% of the workload has been pushed into the driver's registrar's workload from the department, and I haven't heard, maybe they have said it, is that true, and would the department agree with that?
I believe we're going to bring the department forward at this time at the request of Representative Hausman. A comment, Representative Nash.
Mr. Chair and Representative Runbeck, not only has Ms. Olson, who's joining us now, made that comment in several committees, but there have been time and motion studies that we did present in your committee the other evening that did corroborate the same, that they are now doing much more work than ever before, and their result was actually greater than 40%. It was 60%, if my memory serves me right. So, dodging Representative Kosnick's head here. The time and motion study was greater. Ms. Olson's testimony has been 40%. So I think that the 40% is almost incontrovertible at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just would like that confirmed, please.
Thank you. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead.
I'm Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dawn Olson, and I am the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services. I guess as a point of clarification, that percentage did not come from the department. I believe that was a study that the deputy registrars conducted in a response to evaluate their work. So I'm not familiar with the 40%. I do acknowledge that more work has shifted in that direction. But if I have stated that in a previous testimony, I'm not recalling it right now.
All right, thank you.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe a question for Director Olson as well. I recall, I think, I don't know that you were the one who said it when I was present, but I remember the former commissioner of Minute had made a comment to us early in the days of the rollout, and I think Representative Nash was there as well, but I think that he made it very clear that the idea was, and I think at the time, there was still, I think there were still visions of hope at that time that this was actually going to roll out after a few bumpy weeks, get it on track, because it was literally, I think, a couple weeks after this was going, and I think we had a lot of concerns. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, again, I remember hearing him clearly saying anyway that a large part of this, and I don't want to specifically say to a number, a significant amount of the work is going to be transferred to the offices of the deputy registers, and then that would streamline the office in St. Paul. Do you recall that conversation with us, that general conversation? I mean, I'm not saying I want to put you to a number, but I clearly remember former Commissioner Baden said that to us as we were kind of walking through this. So I mean, I just want to see if you have that recollection.
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't specifically to that kind of context. You know, there was definitely decisions that were made to streamline the process. And just to give you a little bit of history on what that process was like prior to Minlar's, the deputies did collect that work for us and validated the information and collected the appropriate fees, and then that work was sent into us. At that time then, you know, our office collected paperwork from 174 offices, and what we've been living through for the last several years and had a lot of testimony in these hearings are about the backlog in our title production. And that backlog has been generated from the amount of paper that we have to accumulate and get mailed in. And so the intention has always been, if deputies can start this process for us, if they can get this information into the system, and all we need to do then is be another second set of eyes, verify the information, go through and verify that everything is intact, we can certainly expedite the title application process much quicker. And I will be the first one to admit, I know this has been challenging, and I know this has made life for the deputies very difficult. I will say, though, that they are getting much better at this role. And I will also say that our communication that happens now with customers has dropped significantly, because in the past we would take in that paperwork and there may be things that were not complete. There may be things that we have to mail a letter to the customers about, because there might have been things that may have, and for nobody's fault, it was just inadvertently missed. That would continue to delay the titling process. So when that work would come in, and it would unfortunately pile up, and when we would get to that work, which could be 1, 2, maybe 3 months later, now we're emailing or mailing the customer and saying, we're missing this in the transaction, or you failed to provide this information. It was very frustrating for customers when they felt, if I'd have known that 2 months ago, I could have provided it sooner. So it has always been a very ongoing titling process, just because of the amount of steps that we were taking. I know deputy registrars want to provide quality service to customers, and I know they had to deal with customers that were frustrated at the title backlog as well. Years ago, we would have many conversations with the deputies about what's it going to take to improve your titling process. The Minlar system gave us that opportunity to do that. If deputies can do the front-end part of the work, validate the information, making sure everything is correct, it shaves off a tremendous amount of time on the back end. Like I said, our letters have dropped significantly that we have to correspond with customers on. We would normally send out 500-600 letters a day to customers asking for additional information. Now we're down to about 100-200. So we are starting to see the improvements that are coming from that change in that process.
A follow-up, Representative Baker?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I think, so going back to the original question about, again, the 40%, if we would have launched MNLARS successfully, if we as a state, and things would have went smoother, and things were operating as you kind of dreamt they would, is it fair to say then, with your comments just now then, that there would be significant more work in the field, acquiring better information, cutting down much less letters going out from your office, allowing the duplicate titles, which they're going to be doing this fall, which I think is a good move, and I think we need to keep pushing more of that, of those optional services out to deputies that want to do that. Would you say that that's 20%, 30%? I mean, just if you had a number, if things were running smoothly, saying what you just said, you have any idea what that would be? Because it's significant. It's not just peanuts, but I think you're saying it would be significant.
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I just want to clarify. I don't think I qualified it as significant. I recognize that it was different and that there definitely is more time, but I can't speak to what that time looks like. I'm not a deputy registrar working in that office. All I can speak to is on the other end of the process, the improvements and the enhancements that we're seeing, and what those mean to customers as far as the titling process.
Thank you.
Representative Barr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll direct this question to Commissioner Olson, but it's going back to what Representative Hausman was talking about, and I believe you said in a prior testimony that the fees that are collected on specialty plates actually covers the remainder of the fees on regular license plates, and I just wanted to get clarification on that.
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Representative Barr's statement is correct. I do have some of that information as part of my testimony. If you want me to go through that now, I can, or I can answer just the question. I'll wait for your preference.
Mr. Chair, it's your will.
Go ahead, Ms. Olson.
To clarify a little bit about the fee that we do collect on plate, the fee is not intended to be a source of revenue as much as it is a source of a means to cover the cost of plate production. We cover the cost of plate production on the funds that we collect for the plate, as well as the appropriation that we get from the HUTD money. Our ability to do that keeps the cost of the plate production at a manageable rate for customers. We haven't increased this cost in several years. But as an example, when we produce a set of plates, duplicate plates, a set of double plates, for a customer, we are charged $6.33 from MNCOR. We collect $6 from the customer. And regular passenger plates are the majority of the plates that we produce for the state of Minnesota. The difference in being able to cover the difference in that is because we charge $10 for a specialty plate or a personalized plate, and that helps us to subsidize the cost of the personalized or the passenger plates. Another thing to consider is that DVS pays for those plates once they leave the Department of Corrections. That fee is not charged on to the deputies. MNCOR produces the plates, holds them, but once they leave the factory in Rush City, we are then charged for those plates. We don't recover that cost until that plate is sold. So some plates may go out and sit in offices for a number of months, maybe even a number of years before we recover those expenses on those plates. So it is somewhat of a cash flow issue as well. We do use the HUTD funds to be able to cover those in the interim. But for the most part, we pretty much, with the HUTD and the money that we collect on the specialty, we break even on the cost of that production. We have estimated, and we know we owe this committee a fiscal note But we have estimated that our preliminary numbers show that this would be about a $13 million reduction in the general funds and approximately about a $2.9 million reduction in the DVS and vehicle services operating accounts. And with that, I'll stand for any additional questions.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Olson, you mentioned there were 500 to 600 calls today the agency was handling. How many employees did it require on a full-time basis to handle those 500 to 600 calls a day?
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my question was more letters that went out, not calls that went out. Is that the comment you're looking at? We sent out about 500 to 600 letters to customers if there was something missing on a title transaction.
Well, Mr. Chair,
I
recall, Ms. Olson, you saying 500 to 600 per day, and now it's 1 to 200 per day.
Yeah, and excuse me, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, it was on letters that we mail out to customers as we are processing applications. Okay. So because of the work that the deputies are doing to verify that information and making sure it's more complete, that number's dropped down significantly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Chair, I remember the department talking about this figure, and I thought it was 40% a week or so ago in front of this committee. There seems to be some forgetfulness. Could we have staff review the tapes, and maybe we can rediscover what that testimony was at the time? And then the other thing I would ask, Mr. Chair, is there a deputy registrar here who could comment on what they know that number to be? Maybe it is 50 or 60%. If so, could we hear from them as well?
We will, Representative Drazkowski, but I'm going to go to Representative Petersburg first in case his question is for Ms. Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and it indeed is. Thank you, Director Olson, for being here. And I have a couple of questions for you, but I first want to remind you and this committee of some of the testimony that we have heard in this and other committees in regards to Minlars. It started with the discussions about how HP, when they were hired, they were terminated because of slipshod and shoddy work, I believe was the words that were being used. And then Minlars was put in charge by Minute. And I'm sorry, I can't hardly describe the current state of Minlars much more than that slipshod and shoddy work. So we haven't really changed much. Now, we've also then changed the director of Minute as well. But going back to HP, we also had testimony by the representative from deputy registrars that one of the things that HP rolled out was the registrar's ability to print permits, the 21-day and others permits. That has been working flawlessly, and as a matter of fact, is one of the reasons why Minlars is actually able to keep giving people ability to drive their vehicles because of that. So there's some sort of inconsistencies in what we're hearing from, but the one thing that is consistent with all of that is that the agency supervising the rollout, the groups involved, has been your department, Department of Vehicle Services. And as individuals, we're being asked to be accountable for what we do up here at the legislature. And in my opinion, how the Department of Vehicle Services has really let down not only the people of the state of Minnesota, they let down us, they let down the governor. And so the question in regards to how do we keep deputy registrars, which, by the way, as deputies, are part of your own team. And today I've heard you mention many times, well, they're getting better at this, as if to imply because they aren't doing their job, Minlars is doing this. Is it not reasonable for us to, first of all, expect you being accountable for the way that this Minlars has been run and directed, and why aren't we having a little bit more accountability and really honest conversation with us, is my first question.
Director Olson.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I believe that I know that the Commissioner of Public Safety has come before this committee and apologized to the members as well as the deputy registrars and citizens of Minnesota as to the frustrations that have happened with the rollout of Minlars. I believe that has happened on more than one occasion. I have never not stated that there is an accountability here. We certainly feel a strong sense of accountability. And that is why we are working diligently to try to work with the situations that have happened because of the limitations on Menlars. We work with citizens, we work with deputy registrars, we've allocated resources where we can, and I know that my team has worked tirelessly to try to figure out how we come up with solutions. DVS has also been a victim of this circumstance as well. We operate in the same system that the deputies do. We have the same limitations that they do as well. So I am very respectful and sensitive to what has happened with the deputies and the challenges that they have faced. I've never not said that and never not been accommodating to that. But my job is to do the best that we can with the limitations that we have to be able to meet the needs of citizens. And so that is our commitment, to be able to honor that and try to make things better. When I talked about they're getting better, that was never my intention to say that they weren't. My only comment was to say that from where it was before when we launched to where we are today, they are getting more comfortable. They are learning and understanding how to work within the system just as much as we are. It's a daily communication with them. When we find things that will work better or there's improvements that have to be made, we send out daily updates to the deputies to give them some recommendations and advice, recognizing there's always and continues to be limitations, but this is definitely a two-way partnership. We need them to be able to give us their feedback on what's happening so we can take it forward and figure out how to prioritize that, what's causing these issues, where is it coming from. So we rely very heavily on their involvement and what they can bring to the project. I would never want to think that I am not respectful of the position that they're in, because I am very highly respectful of the situation that this has generated. And my goal is to try to figure out how do we take this and make it better for everybody involved, not just the deputies, because they are a key partner for us, but as my staff as well, who is trying to do everything they can to get this, to make this better and to be able to meet the demands for what citizens expect in Minnesota.
Representative Petersburg, a follow-up.
Thank you, and I appreciate your earnestness in that, but you need to also understand rhetoric and how you imply things are important. And as somebody who is dependent upon you for training and so forth, when you say they're getting better at learning, you have to understand that that is also your responsibility. And when they haven't learned well, that's also a breakdown in communications and so forth from the department. But getting on to my second question is, in understanding that a lot of these driver or agencies, the registrars, are losing funding, what has your department brought forward to help compensate, bring them whole or keep them whole into the future?
Ms. Director Olson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I can't say that there's anything official that we have brought forward. There have been several discussions about how to make that possible. I think there are several of those options before you for your consideration on how to do that. Our job is simply to carry out whatever those decisions are that are made to be able to do that for them. We follow what the statute allows us to do, and that's our responsibility.
Representative Peters.
Mr. Chair, I'll finish with that, and thank you for that. I just think that here we're looking at a situation where there's been a lot of finger-pointing and a lot of passing the buck, and I think we need to really get down to the brass tacks, shall we say, that we're all responsible and we have to keep moving forward. We need to work together, and we can't just say, well, we're not going to do anything. Things are going to get better. I think that's important for us, and I think we need to also have people stand up and actually be accountable for their decisions as well as decisions prior to them. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one last question. Director Olson, do you and your department support the direction of this bill, assuming we get the percentage right? And do you acknowledge that we need to right-size the department to fit that percentage and accommodate the direction of this bill?
Director Olson.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I come before you today just to provide our concerns for your consideration and for you to use in your decision-making. As far as the size of the organization and adjusting the staff, I think I'm a little bit too early in the process to know that what that adjustment and change is. I know that right now my staff is working overtime, mandatory overtime, to be able to keep up with the demands of the limitations that we have around the system and how we make things work and go forward. So it's a little bit premature for me to make any predictions on what that might look like, but it is always a consideration as we look to the organization of the future, what that skill set's going to need to be, what kind of people do we need to be bringing into the organization to make that viable, because we have a huge responsibility for the state of Minnesota that we are tasked with, and we need to make sure that we have the skills to be able to carry those out.
Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hearing that last statement, Director Olson, you said your staff is working mandatory overtime. Am I to assume your staff is being paid for their overtime while deputy registrars are not being paid for their overtime?
Director Olson.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, yes, my staff is being paid overtime, but I, by law, have to pay them overtime.
Thank you. At this time, we will, I don't know who wants to come down to testify on the bill, but question from Representative Hausman, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair,
Director Olson,
I
believe.
Could, and I didn't know, just to clarify, did you come with prepared testimony today to respond to the bill, or did I misunderstand that?
Director Olson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I gave a brief overview of what my prepared testimony was. It really was to bring forward the fee, adjustment on the fee, and reappropriating those funds into a different account, what that would mean from an operational standpoint and our difficulty in being able to pay the obligations that we have.
And, Mr. Chair, we're not voting on this today, so she doesn't have to answer this. I'm assuming when we do get the fiscal note, the department would be here. But I the two questions I asked earlier, one was the issue of, we have the other bill, which is pay deputy registrars for past work, and then this one, which sets up a program for the future. And they both take funds from various places, and because I didn't have the other bill in front of me, I wasn't sure if are we on a collision course, are they compatible, and you don't have to answer that now. I'm assuming if you're coming back when we have the fiscal note, you could address it. And then the other one, as I tries to sort through. Right now we collect the full cost of manufacturing plates through the cost and fee. My understanding is that wouldn't be the case in the future, and that the department has the responsibility to cover it through, again, taking from various sources. Is the impact of that, because you take them from sources that a number of people have paid into, that in the future the customer wouldn't be paying the full cost of the plate, but everyone else would bear the responsibility for paying for that? And so those are two that I asked earlier, that it might be more than you want to go into now, but if you're going to come back, they would be further points of clarification.
Director Olson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, there was a lot to your question, and I don't want to misrepresent what you're trying to get to. I'll try to simplify it a little bit and see if this helps. The main thing is the plate fee that we collect, the $6 on a set of double plates, we are charged $6.33. That is a direct contribute that comes directly from the customer. To make up the difference on that plate cost, and to keep us within the contract that we have with MinCorp, because of costs of materials, we renegotiate that and not have to come to the legislature. The special plates, where we charge $10 for those plates, will make up some of that difference on the plate cost. So those two plate costs come directly from the customer when they purchase, either a specialty plate or a regular passenger plate. We supplement that plate production because it's more than just the cost of the plate. It's the mailing of the plate, it's the shipment, it's the stickers. There's a lot that it gets involved into the plate production process. It's subsidized or appropriated money that we get from HETD funds. So each year we get about $8 million that comes in, and then we supplement with the money that comes from what the customer contributes. From my understanding of the bill, taking a portion, 40% of that plate fund, would reduce what we bring in to be able to go toward that cost. That's where it's coming from.
Thank you. We will now move ahead to testimony. Quick question from Representative Barr.
I'm just wondering, Mr. Chair, if it would be possible for us to get a spreadsheet for some of the testimony that Commissioner Olson just discussed in terms of how these revenues are collected, divided, and instead of us trying to just keep them floating in our minds.
Thank you, Representative. We will be getting more information as we work through this issue. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Julie Hansen. I'm the Deputy Registrar and the Property and Customer Service Manager for Scott County. I'm here today representing Scott County as well as the Minnesota Association of County Officers. I have a few metrics as well as a few statements to share with you today. But my opening actually is to share the results of the time and motion study that was conducted by the independent accounting firm through the MDRA. The title production increase in time actually is 62% in our offices. The time spent on renewals is 80%. So that is the actual results of the participation in the time and motion study. As far as Scott County is concerned, we have seen a reduction in transactions 2017 by almost 12% due to an inability to process the transactions. Reduction in revenue year-end 2017 of more than $26,000. Overtime and comp time paid year-to-date over $10,000. Comp time accrued but not used almost $4,000. And we have seen a property tax increase of $20,700 to cover part of the 2017 deficit. So property taxes are being used in my county to supplement motor vehicle services offered to your constituents. So in essence, they are paying twice. They are paying through property taxes and they are paying through the fees that they pay in our offices. We also closed our Elko New Market office 3 days after the MNLARS rollout due to the inability to A, process transactions and B, the ability to staff those transactions. We were able to man that office with one staff member full time. We realized very quickly that we could no longer do that. Expectations for 2018 that is unbudgeted, using the same number of transactions in 2017, we would need to see an increase in fees of $65,000, not including overtime costs to cover expenses. And if you look forward to Real ID, we're expecting to need $172,000 to cover costs for a full year. So if you look at just the cost for 2018, being as that it's only a quarter, we're looking at $43,000. That's over $100,000 just in 2018. Due to these metrics, our county board for months really thought hard about whether they wanted to offer these deputy registrar services to the citizens. Thankfully, they did come back and say, yes, we do. There's a real need for these services. The other offices around us would be overwhelmed with business due to the fact that we do over 90,000 transactions a year. One of those offices actually is here today and planning to testify. I'm sure she can tell you a little bit about, you know, a little bit more about what that would do. What the bill doesn't do is allow compensation for agents and registrars for attempted transactions. We do a lot of zero-fee transactions. We do a lot of 60-day permits. we have a lot of transactions that we try. If you come in and you bring, let's just say, a title, for example, if we can't get it into the MNLAR system, we don't know until the end. So we've now spent 30 minutes, 45 minutes, it's been an hour and a half sometimes with customers, only to be given an error message at the end that we can't do it. That's not tracked anywhere. That's not a transaction. Director Olson testified that the intention was to have the department be a second set of eyes on title production, and I don't disagree with having a second set of eyes at all. There needs to be. In order to have correct information out there in the system, you definitely need to have more than one person. We have that in our offices already. So what we would propose is current process is we enter the data, the title enters a pending status. Currently, that is in pending status until the department reviews the paperwork that was submitted and approves it for issuance. We would love to see the offices being given the ability to pick that up from the pending status, have another agent log in, be able to review that information, and be able to print titles in our offices. End goal, that really would be the best service to the dealers, to our regular customers, and whether we were able to do that same day or the following day, or even absorb the cost of mailing, that seems like if that's something that we're willing to do and could certainly take on per direction from the department, we would recommend going in that way. So, you know, in closing, we really under this model have to add staff in order to process an equal or lesser amount of transactions. So that doesn't seem like good business to me. So thank you for your time, and I would be happy to stand for questions.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. A question from Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifier. So you mentioned that the county board was in deliberation if they were even going to continue to provide these services. You just spoke about adding staff, and in the course of your testimony, I heard several hundred thousand dollars going forward is what's anticipated per year. So from a county perspective, were there any deliberations as to where this money, what services from a county that are currently being delivered to the county would have to be sacrificed in order to make up for this failure that's been thrust upon your team?
Ms. Hansen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lucero, there actually have been those conversations ongoing for a long time. We want to be everything, of course, to everyone, and we understand that we can't be. There are some services that we are looking to move out of our offices that we are losing money on, definitely. Fortunately, our county board has taken the position that we are there to provide service. We are trying to do some creative reorganization to be able to train other staff and be able to combine some of our departments. So hoping to balance that out a little bit, but there are definitely conversations, tough conversations going on at the county level.
Thank you. The next testifier, please. Oh, I missed. Representative Nash, did you have a comment?
Well, Mr. Chair, to Representative Lucero's comment, this is affecting both counties or publicly owned registrars and privately owned registrars. And I would point out that the really glaring issue is that the private registrars have no means to assess this back to a tax roll. So
please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm Kirsten Sayers, and I own the Deputy Register's Office, 136 in Isle, Minnesota. I've owned it for the last 2 years, and I worked for the prior owner for the last 8 years. Since the MNLARS rollout, I am a one-person operation. I did have a part-time employee prior to MNLARS. She now, once in a while, will come in and volunteer her time because she knows I cannot afford to pay her. Since MNLARS, I have not even taken a paycheck myself. I'm trying to keep the business afloat. My house is on the line. because it's hooked through the SBA loan when I purchased it, the business. My credit cards are maxed to the hilt because I'm trying to keep the business afloat. I just had my corporate taxes finished as of yesterday with not taking a paycheck, and everything, I am lost about $21,000 since Minlars. The time it takes, I have a few dealers that come in. They do a lot of salvage. They could be standing there with two, three titles, an hour and a half for me to try and enter them in. In the meantime, you've got other customers that come in. They don't want to stand there that long. They're walking out. And I'm on the south end of Mille Lacs Lake. So you got summertime people that are normally used to bopping in, bopping out. They ain't going to stand there that long either. They want to get in and get out. They'll go back home and take care of their business down there. Sometimes I've lost several thousands of dollars. This bill needs to be supported by everyone here and signed by our governor as soon as possible. We need help. Not today, not tomorrow. We needed it yesterday. Please help us.
Thank you for your testimony. Could you repeat your name, please? We didn't catch it.
Kirsten Sarazin. S is in Sam, A-R-A-Z-I-N.
Thank you very much for that. We appreciate it. Any questions? Representative Johnson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Verzin, and thank you, Representative Nash, for bringing a small rural registrar to this committee. And that raised a question for me when I first read the bill this afternoon about the formula that's being used for the distribution of the funds. And formulas, I know, can be skewed, and it can work different ways based on size of operation. And I was wondering, has there been any analysis how this formula works for a small office like Ms. Ferrison's versus a larger office and is there an equitable distribution? I noticed that 10% is evenly distributed across all registrars. It certainly looks like that's a great idea, and that would help the smaller offices. But I was wondering, are there any runs on that? Maybe Mr. Lee would know. Or Mr. Burris. All right.
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair and members, I've been working on assembling some data in order to put some estimating together. I don't have anything fully prepared yet, but that is on my to-do list.
Follow-up person.
Well, thank you, and I think obviously that's something we want to take a peek at, because so that formula gets out, so we don't exacerbate any problems with this formula. So thanks a lot, but I really appreciate your testimony, and I wish you the very best going forward. It's a tough spot you're in.
Any closing remarks, Ms. Sarazin?
And thank you, and I do.
Yeah. You're welcome. Next. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm going to be brief because you've seen enough of me lately.
Please identify yourself for the
record. My name is Gay Smith, and I am representing the Deputy Registrar in South St. Paul in City Hall. And I just want to reiterate that in our deputy appointment papers, that we all have taken oath. And would all of the deputies that are here please stand up? We have all taken an oath to our Commissioner of Public Safety that we will swear to faithfully discharge his or her duties and to uphold the laws of the state. When we are collecting wrong fees from our taxpayers and the system shows wrong fees, we question it. And we question it because of this oath that we have taken.
We also sign that all motor vehicle tax collections shall be made by the deputy registrar strictly in accordance with the rates prescribed by law and as reflected in the official tax table, and such supplementary sheets and forms as the registrar may supply from time to time. All license plates and tabs, certificates in lieu of plates, shall be issued in numerical order, progressing consecutively through each series from lowest to highest. The registrar shall provide those to us. Also, in our reporting, that we are mandated by our regulator, which is our Commissioner of Public Safety, and goes through Driver and Vehicle Services. Deputy registrar shall report to the registrar on a summary report form prescribed or approved by the registrar, a summary of the motor vehicle transactions collected each day, and what that summary must include. We had no choice on the MNLARS. We are willing to also, in that oath that we took and signed with the commissioner signing, that the deputy registrar shall accept all applications and the deputy registrar shall provide service in a prompt and courteous manner. We are unable to do that, and we respectfully need your support, not just for rural, we need metro, we're all hurting, and we need to supply that service to our citizens. That's our main concern.
Thank you.
And if you have any questions, I will be here for you.
I don't see any right now. I think we'll move on to the next testifier. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, as the next one is coming down, I would point out that they do provide this service, even in all the challenges, very courteously. So just wanted to give them a chuck on the shoulder. They've been up against the wall, but they've been doing it with as big a smile as they can muster.
Thank you, Representative. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Denise Toltzman, Prior Lake License Bureau.
One more time for
Denise
us.
Denise Toltzman, Prior Lake License Bureau. Denise Toltzman, Prior Lake License Bureau. Toltzman.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, yeah. Members of the committee, good afternoon. As an employee of Prior Lake License Bureau prior to MNLARS, my job has been enjoyable and very rewarding to our customers on a daily basis. Since the rollout of MNLARS, it has been heartbreaking, very frustrating, as many of us cannot do a simple renewal. Renewals prior to MNLARS were a 1 to 3 minute transaction. We are now looking at minimum of a 5 to 15 minute turnaround on a simple renewal when a customer walks in. When they're walking in, they're standing in lines for at least an hour. Title transfers, I could whip out a title transfer, and I've been doing this for 17 years, in a minimum of 15 minutes. Now we're looking at 45 minutes to an hour. Customers are frustrated. We're frustrated. This has become our daily habit. We're in hopes that you will support this bill, and thank you very much.
I do not see any questions, Ms. Toltzman. We'll move on to the next testifier. Please identify yourself for the record. Go ahead.
Deanna Schweitzer.
Thank you, Deanna.
I also work for the Prior Lake License Bureau and am a citizen of Minnesota. I myself am a clerk there, and we are a privately owned location, so I've seen how it's affected people personally. In general, I got one example. I had a customer call the other day that was wondering where his title was. He bought the car 7 months ago. Everything was immediate in the system, which is awesome, right? That's part of this new system. It's immediate. However, he never received a title. He then had an accident. Insurance wanted to total the car. He has to produce a title to get that insurance money to get his next car. And there was nothing we could do. 7 months later. Now it's been another 2 months, still no title, and this is due to technical issues in the system. And it's just wasting that just in a hole. I mean, that one simple scenario. He has to now spend more money, go get another car while he's waiting on that title to turn in. Emotionally, I'm sympathizing with them. I couldn't imagine. I wouldn't be able to afford it myself. Bottom line, like this, they had said, when we call down to the state, I'm sympathetic to them, too. I understand it's not their fault. They're trying to do everything we're trying to do. To just, the end result is to be more efficient and take care of that customer. I mean, that's why we're here. And it's very difficult to do when we took on a new role. Not that we can't do the role. The task itself is simple. However, it requires more time and effort on our end. And that is what these bills are trying to do, is one, compensate for that, and two, the past, since this came out in the end of July, and then going forward, we're going to keep taking on that role, if not more, and so therefore the bills are trying to address that, and I would appreciate, as a citizen, as a worker at these deputies, that adjustment so we can all work happily ever after.
Thank you, Ms. Schweitzer. A question from Representative Barr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm not sure if this is something that Representative Nash could answer if we need Commissioner Olson, but I know that some transactions are processed centrally, and I'm just wondering, when people who have questions around those kinds of transactions go into an office with questions when they're having issues or concerns, how are the registrars in those offices compensated for that customer service?
Representative Nash, or do you want...
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. You heard testimony earlier that many of the things that are brought to the attention of deputy registrars are not able to be solved by them. So they'll flip them over the fence to the department, and yet time has been expended at the deputy registrar window. They're not being compensated for many of the things that they're doing. So, again, businesses that are there to serve the customer ostensibly, they can't do it. So if Representative Drazkowski comes in to me the day that I'm working at the deputy registrar and he asks me a detailed question, if I don't have the answer or I can't solve his problem, I have to flip them over the fence to the department. And as a business owner, I've now expended a tremendous amount of time. That's not fair, and that's what we're hearing for the last number of months. We've been hearing that.
Thank you. The next testifier, please.
Let's not do that.
Please identify yourself for our record and go ahead with your testimony.
My name is Larry Uridi. My wife and I own the Ely License Bureau in Ely, Minnesota. We've owned the business for about 12 years. We got 1 year left to pay on it. Prior to Menlo's, we were rolling along pretty good. The numbers were very adequate. We have one part-time employee besides my wife and I. The new model just is not sustainable. I haven't had a paycheck since August. My wife took a paycheck this month for the first time since August. 12 years, for the first time in 12 years, I've had to take money out of my retirement and put it into my business account to pay our part-time help. We've been willing to do that, and we're trusting in good faith that the situation is going to be remedied. Every process we do takes more time. There's more. I could get into the glitches. I don't want to waste your time doing that. I'm sure you're all aware of it. You've heard the story. We do go through the same thing. The young gal that testified that bought the one in Ireland 2 years in, I grieve for it. I can understand that. I know we're not bleeding, gentlemen. We're hemorrhaging. We need this. We need it. It's got to be fixed. Or close the door. I'm looking at the decision every month. Can't sustain it. It just can't sustain it. And with the new driver's license coming in, I have no idea how that's going to affect us. I'm going to have to remodel our building because we're limited for space. I'm going to have to add more counter space. Do I do that or do I fold? And a lot of it's going to hinge on how this comes out. We're going to hang in there as long as we can, but I'm not going to spend my entire retirement selling license plates for you.
Thank you, Mr. Reedy, for your testimony. I do not see any questions for you.
No questions, just a comment.
Representative Mason does have a question, I believe.
Okay, I just have one comment or question of Representative Nash. Now, just questioning how quickly your bill can possibly get through the process, but the way I understood your intro, this was mainly something that was started before the crisis. So this really isn't meant to just deal with the crisis. This is part of the new change. But in the meantime, we're hearing from people that need money yesterday. And I'm thinking that's an issue that we really need to be taking care of right away. I mean, I'm really worried about this.
Representative Nash.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Mason, you're giving me a launching pad for my conclusion. If you'll remember, this was a decision that was made long before things were launched. And in an ideal sense, if MNLARS would have worked, we still would have had to have done this. Now we're looking at not only do we have to get them some emergency funds, because you've got people from Metro and Outstate who are all suffering. This family should not have to go without a paycheck for months. But this was a decision that was made, a business decision. And you heard Director Olson say that the business decision was made to shift work to the deputy registrars. She just said it a little bit ago. That decision was made. These folks were never consulted. They were never talked to about how this is going to be impacting you. They never heard that. The decision was made, and welcome to the new reality. So it creates a need not just for a short-term help for them, but a long-term solution, because the work is not going to go away unless the department decides to take that work back in-house and go back to the old paradigm. We haven't heard that. We hear that it's supposed to be great, it's supposed to streamline things, it's supposed to be better for the back end, but it's not helping the front end. It's causing folks who are good folks that have been doing this for years to lose money every day. So I'm with you that we need to get them help immediately, and Representative Baker's bill does that. And Representative Chair Torkelson we've all three got bills that are sort of doing different things. This fix in this bill is to pay them more because they are now doing more work. And with the amendment that we had today, because we drafted it, we forgot to make the effective date 2018, but with the amendment that has now been added onto the bill, this could happen this year. And I would hope that we would support that, because these folks need the help. They're good people. And, you know, Metro, Outstate, people who are long time invested in this business, the game has been changed without them signing up for that. It's just been forced on them. And I'm glad that you've asked this question, because it's true. We have to solve the long term and the short term. And it's on our shoulders. The department made the decision, but sadly, the fix is now in our lap.
Okay.
A follow-up, Representative Mason?
I think I agree with him. I mean, we need to deal with the current problems these people are facing. Yesterday, as she said.
Representative Hornstein.
thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I said this at the policy meeting when we heard this bill. I'll just quickly repeat it again. I appreciate this bill. I think it's going in the right direction. And, you know, the deputy registrar, as I said this before, have been literally on the front lines of this issue from the start. I think they were the ones that really brought this to a lot of people's attention. I want to specifically, I know, you know, Gay Smith, I want to, you know, especially applaud. I think that she contacted Representative Hansen, who told me your stories, and so we knew about this in summer. And so this is what we need to be doing. And I would hope that, and again, I said this before in the other hearing, I think this is going to demand some general fund money. You know, I think this differential in the license plate, you know, cost versus you know, the incremental loss that the DVS takes on the license plates is problematic, and you know, we need some relief there. But I hope that, you know, as we move this bill through the process, and we will move it, we does need to move and move quickly. I hope that we can look at some of this general fund support for some of these other items, because you know, it needs to be comprehensive, but clearly the system with the deputy registrars needs to be fixed. Your bill does that, I appreciate your work on this.
Any closing remarks, Representative Nash?
Well, again, Mr. Chair, members, thank you. I view this as a bipartisan effort. We've got to get it right. These folks that came down here today are from everybody's district. They represent communities all over the state. And, again, the decision was made to shift work towards them and take it off the back end. I think that begs for a change, and we can make that change. And I hope that you'll join me in doing that. And, Mr. Chair, I appreciate all the effort that you and Chair Baker have done as well. I hope that we can get this done quickly and get some relief to these folks, not just in short term, but in the long term. Fix this problem. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Representative Nash, for bringing the bill forward. We're laying this bill over. Just a couple remarks. Representative Hausman, before I make a closing statement.
I just didn't know if anyone has pointed out that, that today is Jenny Nash's birthday.
Oh. No relation.
She didn't want it.
Well, I don't know where the cupcakes are, but we'll look for them.
We've got vitamin water.
Before we leave, members, I would like to thank all those that came to our hearing today. We're hearing you. We're working hard to try and fix this. It's not easy or quick work, and I apologize for that. If I could snap my fingers and make this happen tomorrow, I would, or yesterday, as one of our testifiers said. So thank you for being here, and I appreciate the support from the other side of the aisle. This is tough work, but the state of Minnesota has put ourselves in what I think is an embarrassing position. Frankly, this is government at its worst, folks, and we deserve to do better, and these folks deserve to be treated better. That hand was not for me, by the way. With that, members, we are.